Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. My cat just sat right on my keyboard. Luckily, it didn't hit any buttons. Some buttons that GMs and owners around the NFL have been pressing. The fire button, the eject button. There's a lot of that going on. We're going to sort through some of that with national NFL analyst at Bleacher Report, Brent Sobleski. Brent, good morning.
Good morning. They obviously are restarting their computers and getting ready to roll for a new day. Sorry, I tried. I couldn't quite tie it in there as well as I thought I could.
That's all right. It was a clunky one on my part anyway. This Insider, by the way, is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Over at BleacherReport.com, Brent, you had your first kind of post-regular season mock draft that you take part in. Last night, Alabama-Georgia, really fun game. And that game included 14 of your top 150 for this draft, as well as potentially the number one and number two picks in next year's draft. Did anyone stand out to you from that game as a big winner or loser, or, you know, draft stock rising, draft stock falling?
Well, the obvious answer is Jameson Williams, based on, as you stated, that he was hurt in this contest. And it did not look good, being it was a non-contact injury. In fact, if you watched it closely, you could almost see the tendon snap in his knee. And I'm not trying to jump to conclusions, but when you're talking about someone that could be the number one wide receiver in the NFL draft, that is a gigantic blow to his future, at least in the short term. So looking at where he stands and how he could potentially fall, let's not forget he has another year of eligibility. He's only 21 years old, reigning Biletnikoff Award winner. So we will have to find out the extent of the injury and how much effect it could have, because it's not necessarily the injury itself, it's also the timing, right? Drake London, who we have as a top five prospect out of USC, had a fractured ankle this season. But there was no supposed ligament damage, and being just it's a broken bone, if he can get a clean bill of health prior to the NFL draft, he could be a top 10 selection. So these are the things you have to consider for him. If we're looking on the opposite side, I think basically the majority of Georgia's defense, just how aggressive they were, right? The defensive front, you have Jordan Davis, who, even though he's only a part-time player as a nose tackle, showed that he can do more than just stop the run. Devontae Wyatt, the way he explodes off the ball as a four-eye-five technique or defensive tackle. And then you have N'Kobe Dean, who is all over the field making plays, his potential linebacker number one. So there was so much talent, even if you don't even like either of these teams or even the SEC itself, just to watch it from the NFL draft, it was an absolute blast.
So we've got 3.5 months here to gear up for the NFL draft, and, you know, hopefully we'll get you on closer to then to go deeper on some of these top names. The first order of business for a lot of these teams, though, is figuring out coaching vacancies. You expressed some concern on Twitter yesterday about the type of owner who wants splashy coaching hires instead of just the best coaching hire. When you look around the league at the current vacancies, and I'm a Jaguars fan, so this is fresh in my memory from last offseason. Is there a spot or an owner that you think is at the biggest risk of this, you know, putting a name and a splash ahead of who's the right fit for where they are?
Hey, don't feel bad. I'm in Ohio, and I've covered the Cleveland Browns for a long time. So getting a new coach every offseason was the regular operating procedure for a long time. But I will say this about the Jacksonville Jaguars. That is a fascinating job to me still. And there's multiple reasons why. First of all, you have the number one overall pick, so you can go potentially and get the top defensive lineman, whether you think it's Aiden Hutchinson or Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon, or help make the protection better around Trevor Lawrence to make his life easier and get someone like Evan Neal from Alabama, who looked good last night. So I think that, and plus some of the most salary cap space in the NFL next year. And let's not rule out the fact that Shad Khan's willing to give whatever coach he hires time. I know, and I'm saying that fully aware that Urban Meyer didn't make it through his first season, but that had nothing to do with ownership in Jacksonville. They wanted to give him an opportunity, and he kept failing and making mistakes to force their hand. So I find that fascinating. And furthermore, like Jacksonville, Chicago, those two teams have their quote-unquote franchise quarterbacks in place, right? As a coach, you don't have to go into that situation thinking, who am I going to get to play the game's most important position? As a result, because of Trevor Lawrence, because of Justin Fields, I really look at Jacksonville and Chicago being the most intriguing.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on the Chicago situation. Like, I think Trevor Lawrence, you got to feel confident, and at least you got that little glimpse into what it could be in that game against Indianapolis. People seem to still be torn on Fields and whether he is sort of that guy. And I got to admit, I've done the same thing. There have been moments where I've watched him and gone, yeah, this is really good. And you also have to add to the Matt Nagy factor in this, where you say, well, how much of this is also his situation? How much of this is that offense? But I almost wonder for some coaches if you don't believe in that player, if that makes that job less attractive because you don't have the flexibility or fluidity to believe that your quarterback situation is going to change over the next like 3-4 seasons.
Well, it could be. You're absolutely right. It could go in the opposite direction depending on how you feel about those young players, because you know he's the guy at least for the next few seasons, and you are essentially tying yourself to someone whom you didn't choose. And, you know, when you look at it, it really comes down to how that candidate feels about the quarterback moving forward. There's two things I stress when it comes to hiring, right? You need and you mentioned it earlier, I worry about making the splashy hires, because you hire the right person for the job, not the right name. And unfortunately, too many owners are always looking for the right name because they think it's going to sell tickets. They think it's going to create buzz. They think it's just because people know of a person around the league and outside the league, that means they're a good coach. And that's not always the right decision because they're not always the right fit. So you look at that as a main sticking point. The other is, how are they going to adjust, right? Situation matters. Situation matters. Situation matters. So it becomes beholden to whatever coach walks into that situation. And this is where Matt Nagy actually failed, in my opinion, specifically with Justin Fields, is adapting to what's available to him. When you have a caliber of talent like a Justin Fields, even though he's not necessarily the ideal fit for what you want to do schematically, you make the necessary adjustments to maximize his capabilities. And that's where they failed in Chicago. So it's going to come down to whomever believes they have the right talent in place of quarterback, and then doing whatever is necessary to make Justin Fields comfortable to see his full potential. And that's really what's going to be important, even if it's not hiring the biggest name. Very much so, look at Philadelphia. I think they're a great example right now. No one thought Nick Sirianni was one of the best hires last offseason. But what did he do? He went, he took Jalen Hurts, built an offense around him, and now they're in the postseason, and they're successful. And that says a lot about him and his coaching staff, even though they weren't the biggest name hire along the way.
When we talk about coaches shuffling in the last couple of days, one of the most surprising, it seemed, with fans was the Dolphins getting rid of Brian Flores. And my question to you is, do you think that he's going to find somewhere right away as a coaching vacancy, or if he's going to have a little bit of a waiting period?
He should. But then again, I've been saying Eric Bieniemy should be a head coach for about 3 years running, and he's still not. So you never know exactly how these hiring cycles are going to play themselves out. But it was shocking, and I think most people around the league from outside that organization are still flummoxed as to the real reason why he was let go. You're talking about two straight winning seasons in the AFC East against the Buffalo Bills, who have one of the best teams in the NFL, and Bill Belichick and company over there in New England. By the way, Brian Flores had a winning record against him in that short time. So looking at it, I know Stephen Ross came out publicly and stated that he didn't feel the dynamics within the organization were working out, that there's some type of clashing, whether it be between Flores or retained general manager Chris Greer, or wherever it originated. But at the same time, you were seeing progress. You were seeing success. Two straight seasons to be the first head coach in NFL history to start with a seven-game losing streak, only to turn it around to have a seven-game winning streak and then post a winning record. That says so much about Brian Flores and what he's able to get out of the talent available to him. Because let's be frank about the Miami Dolphins and their roster. Worst offensive line in football. Worst running back room in football. Then you also have one good wide receiver, essentially, that's playing at a high level, and that was Jalen Waddle, who set the rookie record for receptions this year. You know, when you consider that, how well they still played on defense, the fact they did manage a winning record and did so with a second-year quarterback that's still trying to find his way, you know, that says so much about the capabilities of those guys that were on staff, and yet they still decided to move on. To me, that says way more about a potential meddling owner than it does the coach himself.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of "the Dolphins will not be getting Harbaugh" articles and tweets and stuff like that. It's like, okay, I would not be writing those. I would like to make a suggestion that the owner who went to Michigan and who has publicly stated how many times he loves Harbaugh during the offseason, where there is some discussion about his potential return to the pros, and then seeing that domino fall, I would just say maybe let's wait. Like, maybe let's take a beat. Let's at least examine the potential of that being the impetus behind this. Yeah, the Dolphins look like they're going to go in a different direction, and it looks like it's going to be a splashy one. And I think it kind of gets back to what you were saying before, which is you got to be wary of those things. We could see an offseason where the Dolphins add Harbaugh and where they add Deshaun Watson, and everyone on the planet starts to go, well, you know, maybe the Dolphins are the sexy pick for next year, and it doesn't always work out that way. So, last time the Dolphins made a splashy move like that, it was for Dante Culpepper, and yeah, we all know how that ended up turning out. So, don't really necessarily trust the Dolphins. Joe Judge is toast, right? Like, Gettleman retires, which is amazing. It's like, that had to be a forced retirement. I'm sorry. Giants fans celebrating that component of it. But now, Joe Judge, like, what, we're just waiting for the new GM to swing that axe?
Excuse me, I'm sitting there chuckling to myself because all I can think about is Dave Gettleman selected a running back number 2 overall. Oh, my God. Oh. And I know it was Saquon Barkley. I get it.
No.
At the same time. But you just don't do it, man. Not in today's NFL. And he was good his first year, but now we see why you don't take a running back second overall when you deal with injuries because of wear and tear year after year. Anyhow, I digress. Looking at the Giants situation, I'm surprised he made it off the field after the quarterback sneak on near the goal line. And I know a lot of people joked about it, but that is a horrific call in that situation, not having the confidence in your quarterback, your offensive line, or anyone offensively to try to make a play in that situation. I know that they struggled immensely on the offensive side of the ball, but that's just a further indictment of your coaching staff and how you're incapable of developing the talent on that side of the ball, specifically up front, to protect your quarterback, even if it's not Daniel Jones and you're stuck with Mike Glennon. But, Mike Glennon has won games in this league, right? I've seen him beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh. Now, not him necessarily himself, but obviously that he is capable of doing such things. So I think it's really a situation where you look at it and a clean slate may be the best way to go. I don't know if he makes it out of today or not. I know the decision is supposed to be made, but at the same time, this is the Mara family. They are very stubborn. They believe in doing things a certain way, and they won't necessarily move off a guy if they think he can still be their coach moving forward. And so I'm not necessarily ruling out the fact that he's probably or potentially could be there again for another season to prove himself with a better overall roster, that because David Gettleman failed in that regard.
Brent, you wrote at Bleacher Report the other day about Carson Wentz's performance in that game against the Jaguars, which I think 31 NFL fan bases got a kick out of because it made that Sunday way more entertaining and put more on the line. But for the Colts, they, as you wrote, quote, fell flat on their faces in a stunning loss in a must-win situation. Where do the Colts go from here? Because Carson Wentz is a year out from that kind of walk-away part of the contract that the Colts have, but they gave up a third and a pick that ended up becoming a first to get him. Are they kind of stuck in a limbo here where they've paid too much to move off of Wentz, or can they go in a different direction here?
No, they're pretty much stuck at least throughout 2022 based on the way that the contract is set up. As you well stated, they don't have that out, at least from a financial perspective. Let me rephrase, from an accounting perspective. We know in NFL it's funny money, and it just depends on how the deal is structured. It would be in 2023 offseason when they can legitimately move off of him. Now, it comes down to, I understand why they made the bet that they did on him. And despite everything that went wrong in Philadelphia, look, you had your head coach, You have your wide receivers coach. You have an offensive assistant who all served at one point as Carson Wentz's offensive coordinator with the Philadelphia Eagles. Familiarity often breeds confidence. But in this case, it had the opposite effect because they weren't able to coax the most out of him as a player. As I stated in the piece, statistically he played well, but that doesn't necessarily mean he was good enough for what they needed. When you have the league-leading rusher, one of the NFL's best offensive line, and then when you juxtapose that to the way Philadelphia performed without him on the roster, right? Indianapolis got worse with Carson Wentz as their starting quarterback as opposed to Phillip Rivers a year ago. The Philadelphia Eagles traded him away. They got better, right? One team's in the playoffs. One team isn't. You took on over $100 million on a contract, plus gave up a first-round pick, a third-round pick, and so on and so forth. So when you consider the entirety of what occurred and the end result, it's a gigantic black eye on the Indianapolis Colts organization, and they have to hope upon hope that they can maximize Carson Wentz's ability next year, because otherwise they're probably going to have to finally not give in to the sunk cost fallacy and give up and move to another quarterback in 2023.
So the Colts not in the playoffs after a dramatic end to their season, but teams that are, let's tee up what's going on this weekend with Wild Card Weekend. What are some of your most intriguing matchups in terms of maybe a big underdog threat that you think might be able to upset?
Well, I already gave him a little credit earlier, so I'm just going to do it again because I really enjoy the dichotomy of the Philadelphia Eagles versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? You have the young upstarts. You have Jalen Hurts in his second year, Nick Sirianni in his very first year as a head coach, a team that found its identity as the number one rushing team in the NFL, going against the reigning Super Bowl champions. And we know how good the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are. We know that they're an older team that has all the experience and wealth of knowledge in the world to easily win this contest. But I think Philadelphia can keep it close because of the way they play ball. So to me, that's the most intriguing, just because of the dichotomy between those two rosters and franchises and where they could potentially be trending.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. I'm really excited for some of these matchups this weekend. The good games will just keep on coming. And thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
Thank you for having me, as always. And I know I'm late to the party, but Happy New Year anyway.
Hey, Happy New Year to you as well. That Insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. That's a very intriguing question we've actually had in the text line about which would be the most, attractive NFL coaching job for us to take if we were to be in that position. We had a couple texts around that lineup. Jason in Toronto was one of them. Which one would you guys want to step into?
Jags. And again, yeah. I keep dunking on Blake because his worst hopeless franchise ranking pick was so awful. But it's true. His pick was horrific. The Jags have the best upside. They have Trevor Lawrence. If the draft
and the next
happened today,
first overall pick too.
Exactly.
Crazy.
If the draft happened today and Trevor Lawrence came off of that season that he just had, he would still go first overall, like without a question. A year older, with the damage, with everything that's transpired, he's unquestionably the first overall pick. Now you can go in a variety of different ways. You can end up putting a huge offensive tackle in front of him from Alabama. That sounds pretty good. Although I will say, and I know that it's not just a one-man thing. Football is a team game. One, you know, broken link in the chain, blah, 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 that Georgia defensive line. But it wasn't a great ad for me if I want to pick the Alabama kid first overall when, like, Georgia's defensive line is just hammering you start to finish in that game. Either way, you can pick him. You can take the kid out of Michigan, the defensive lineman, who looks like an absolute terror. It's just a very sexy spot to be. There's also this. Urban Meyer was so bad, so terrible, and so hated that whoever steps into that job is going to have infinite more buy-in. It's going to be a spot where you show up and you just don't have to be a complete jackass who's putting his fingers up people's butts in bars, and boom, he's going to end up having his team completely follow him. It's going to be a perfect situation. You're in Florida, great environment, tons of pieces, tons of flexibility, tons of money at your disposal. Trevor Lawrence, another first overall pick. I don't see anything even close.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, you've got the cap space too. That requires a little bit of the recruiting side of things and to hit on that. But yeah, I mean, you'd hope so, right? And hit Brent's point about the word or kind of the buzz being that Shad Khan will give you a lot of roster power as the head coach too. That's kind of a hard to quantify thing of like, you're coming in and maybe you don't get the GM title along with it, but you're going to have a lot of personnel say the way that front office is structured. I think that's, I think that's really interesting as a matter of like franchise building. I don't know if it makes the most sense for like a first time head coach or something like that. But it's still an important factor for those guys figuring out those decisions.
I would go Jacksonville too, but one that also intrigues me would be the Broncos. I think that if they can get a reliable quarterback, they haven't had one since Peyton Manning. They've had four coaches since the title was last won. Haven't been in the playoffs since. I just think that the Broncos have a really good football town. There's still a lot of young players that are a core group. I think that there's a quick turnaround that's available if they can focus on getting a quarterback in the offseason. And, you know, I would see that as a place that can easily go from a dismal situation to one on the rise. So I would probably put them in my 1A, 1B in terms of coaching ranking positions.
Yeah. I think that's a really great choice. You get to live in Denver. You have an absolutely stacked and loaded roster. Denver reminds me of Cleveland right now, where I think those teams are very good. They just have bad quarterback situations. Look at what Denver accomplished this year with Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater is the wins above replacement quarterback, right? Like, he's not really going to cost you any games. He's not going to win you any games. You're just sort of flatlining, and that roster still found ways. And they had a lot of injuries. Like, early on in the season, Denver got beat up. Their secondary got beat up. They did not have a full deck for basically the entire season. So now you take that job, you feel good. The only problem with Denver is that they're kind of one of those perpetual, well, if they can figure out the quarterback places, right? Well, if they can figure out the quarterback. And that's the only reason why I would take the Jacksonville job, is that if you look at historically, and this is like a very, very simple take, but coaches, it's very rare when they're that elite or that they're that special. It's, do you attach yourself to special talent? And Trevor Lawrence still has the ability to be a special quarterback. And so I just want the certainty of that, knowing that I can go in and get a top end, top tier talent at the most important position in football. That matters a lot to me for my legacy. If I can just have some winning seasons in Jacksonville, that guy could end up winning Super Bowls. Who knows? Denver, it's always a lot easier said than done when it comes to the quarterback thing. Like, that's a really, really hard piece of the puzzle to figure out. If you think you're in on the Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes, awesome. It feels to me as though Rodgers and Green Bay have patched things up and he's going to be staying there. Do you think you're in on the Russell Wilson sweepstakes? Okay, maybe. But also then you're giving up a lot of assets to acquire that player. And maybe he's not the same guy that he used to be as he's entering what I think is his age 33 season. Are you signing somebody? Who's on the market that really makes you feel like you're now really going over that Teddy Bridgewater line of wins above replacement? So I like the answer. I think it's a great one, especially like lifestyle-wise. I'd love to live in Denver. I think that would be – I don't know. Have either of you guys been to Denver? It's amazing. It's a great pick. I love that team. I just think it's like we oversimplify it sometimes when we do the like, oh, and we'll find a quarterback. It's like, yeah, that's what they've been doing like for a very long time in Denver. Like, they had Tim Tebow play quarterback there.
Hey, I mean, the Jags can run it back with him at tight end once more. We can we can see how that goes.
Well, I wanted that to work.
That'll be the big swing of, or the big signal of, if the Jags hire is a good one or not. If they don't bring in a gimmick immediately upon being hired. Also, you got to have a better cameo on All Elite Wrestling than Urban Meyer had. That's my second criteria for the Jags. I do like, there's some Byron Leftwich buzz now. Obviously, we don't know a ton about coordinators and how they'll project forward into head coaching jobs when they haven't had that spot before. But, I think I think there are some good names out there. I'm trying to be optimistic. Is clearly I'm trying to sell myself on this.
You don't sound like it, but yeah. you don't sound like an optimistic guy whatsoever when you're just selling that. But
at the end of the day, Brent was still on here just a second ago and like answered, he started talking about the Jaguars when I asked about, hey, what coaching vacancy is probably the biggest risk to make a splash versus, you know, just getting the right candidate. And the Jags already did that one. So forgive me for being, you know, fool me once, however the rest of that goes.
I got to tell you, as a Seahawks fan who desperately wants them to move off of Pete Carroll and John Schneider, the only – there's like – the main reason why I don't care if they don't do it is I don't see a deep coaching class right now. And I know that that's kind of one of those things where we're really not qualified to comment on a lot of these things, right? Like, it's one of the most – you have to have a huge leap to believe that you know what's going to be a great football coach when it's someone from a college program or a coordinator, right? Like, these are things that we don't really know, but there is not a ton of buzz about a lot of names. There just isn't. It feels like there are going to be a lot of vacancies and maybe some retread hires – and some things that don't really make a lot of sense, right? Like, Bieniemy is always a great name to be out there. I think that Byron Leftwich has now entered that conversation of this guy is going to be a head coach someday, so why not do it, especially if you're an organization like the Jaguars? But, yeah, it doesn't appear to me anyways like there are one or two candidates that are out there that you go, oh, my God, well, you got to do that, unless it's Harbaugh. Harbaugh is the only one where I would say, yep, I'm firing my coach immediately in order to get Harbaugh. And I will say, too, that like, that's the one thing with the Dolphins is if they do get Harbaugh, you kind of look back at the Flores thing and go, hey, awesome job by Flores, but you got to do that. Like, you gotta make that move. So it's sort of justifiable. And quarterbacks, hard to get. Look at what Frank Reich did. I think Frank Reich is a really good coach. I think they had a really good staff. I think they maximized that talent. But even you just look at it and say, those are really smart football people who went out and got the very, very wrong quarterback because they couldn't let go of the Carson Wentz from a couple of years ago. So, yeah, those are just definitely tricky spots to think about. Do we want to break?
Yeah, we should break.
To talk about the money we made?
On the other side, look, we're trying to be optimistic right now about some coaching vacancies and some teams that are in bad shape. You know who's not in bad shape? The people who have been tailing the wake and rake the last couple days.
Got a couple DMs on the old Instagram during this block of people with their receipts of their wake and rake parlays. Always appreciate those. Always appreciate those DMs.
Yeah, I hope that the people are coming through with what you requested, which is, you know, 5-star review, subscribe, all that good stuff. If you hit on the wake and rake, we're going to review that. We're going to set up tonight's wake and rake, and maybe we're going to reintroduce the Homer's Parlay. We'll see. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The wake and rake on a hot streak. We went 3-for-3 last night and 4-for-4 on Friday. So we have been just reeling in the dough for everybody, all of our loyal wake and rake listeners. Last night, my Georgia Dogs with the big win.
30-14 overall if you're playing any of these as individual bets instead of as the parlay. I know the whole point is the parlay, and we have won 5 of those, but 30-14 on the individual picks if you're just going that route instead, including Ailish, your big Georgia hit.
I do love the idea of what I do sometimes, which is secretly take only 2 of the picks, knowing that we are going to hit. Because basically 30-14 is telling you we're going 2 or 3 basically every single time. So there's like a secondary game to the wake and rake parlay of you should play the wake and rake, but maybe just $5. And then maybe the secondary wake and rake, which is you basically try to pick the trap door, right? You try to go, which one of these will be the trap door of the day? Let me take the 2 winners.
Smart move.
It's just hard to figure out who's going to be the bad guy in it, because over the last, since you came back, JD, that's 7 Wake and Rakes, and all three of us are 5-2. So you could say in the new year, that includes the New Year's Eve show, but since JD returned from the holidays, we're all 5-2. So it's been this tough thing where it's hard to figure out which one of us to fade right now.
How many of my games were canceled on that streak?
None on that streak. Are back. You lost back December 22nd and December 29th.
Nah. Yeah, you've got all kinds of streaks going. Winning streaks, not canceling game streaks. It's all been good. So, yeah, subscribe to this podcast. Follow us on our socials. As always, if you want to play along and you are new to gambling, shoot me a DM on Twitter. I'll hit you with a promo code to play for free to follow some of these games if you want to learn about. Or even if you are seasoned, you just want to check out a different site, you want to check it out. So, today, we're profitable. We're rich. I'm not as rich as Ailish because I of course, played the Wake and Rake, but then also decided to bet on Alabama. I got them at a good number at plus 143. I thought that was kind of an undeniable play. And then guess what? It is deniable if you lose. They all quickly become very deniable once you lose. So we're moving on. It's on to the next thing. Normally we start with the Leafs lines. I would like to pitch starting today with the Raptors because it is a massive game against the Phoenix Suns.
It sure is. It's a massive game against the Phoenix Suns where the Raptors line is probably going to stand out to some people who have been following this team and becoming believers in this team and see them as 4.5-point underdogs at home.
I have them at -4.
Okay.
Or at +4.
Okay. Yeah. So, they're +4, +4.5, about 170 on the money line or 170 or 165. The Suns are missing 6 players in this one, but only one of those is a guy who's been in their rotation regularly, and that's Cameron Johnson. Like Šarić is out, but he's been out for the bulk of the year. I don't think we factor that in anymore. And then you're missing guys like our boy Ishmael Wainwright, Abdul Nader, Justin Jackson, Frank Kaminsky. Even the Kaminsky thing is like the center depth was such a huge question for the Suns after that. And when DeAndre Ayton was out, it was bad. But like Bismack Biyombo has filled in just fine. Like he's not awesome, but he's Bismack Biyombo. You get exactly what you think from him. So basically I look at this as the version of the Suns you get in a competitive game is missing Cameron Johnson. And that's about it. The Raptors have Scottie Barnes and Gary Trent, who are both questionable for this one. That's obviously a big swing. That's 2 starters. Scottie's been dealing with that right knee soreness on and off, so they might choose to play it cautious. Gary Trent was a late scratch last game with that left ankle swelling. So there are some real question marks there. And we know, even with this 6-game winning streak, the Raptors are not a particularly deep team. They are expecting Yuta Watanabe back tonight, so maybe you can kind of cobble together some of those Scottie Barnes minutes if Barnes doesn't play. But there is a risk there. So I think +4.5 is actually a pretty sharp line. It suggests about 7.5-point difference between these teams on neutral ground. And the Suns are really good. This is a team that went to the NBA Finals last year. They're 30-9 on the season. They're really good. So I don't have any problem with the Raptors being 4.5-point home dogs here.
I have such a little problem with it that I am locking in as my part of the Wake and Rake today, the Phoenix Suns. This is an outrageous line, actually. The Raptors don't have a home court advantage. There is no home court advantage. They're just playing in Toronto in an empty gym. It's a scrimmage. It's a scrimmage. Scottie Barnes and Gary Trent, okay, let's say they play. It's clear that they're not at 100%. Like, Scottie, I think Scottie sits tonight. That's just my gut feel guess based on the listing of this injury at this particular time and the way that they have handled Scottie Barnes and this season so far. That's just my guess. Blake, you can tell me if you feel very differently about this one, but the announcement, the timing, that's a bit of a sketchy one. That's a little bit of a shady one. I think only one of those two guys.
He looked a little hobbled at the end of last game, and don't forget, didn't close that game, right? Like, very rare for the Raptors to not have Scottie Barnes on the floor in a situation like that. So whether it's the the knee or he just wasn't having a great game, and that's in part because he's hobbled.
Both.
I definitely – we have a lot of track record that suggests the Raptors will err on the side of caution with this guy.
Yes. That's it to me. That's this is such a big part of the line to me. It is a – I'm grabbing this earlier because I don't think Scotty Barnes is going to play, and I think there is at least potential that Gary Trent Jr. doesn't play, and the Raptors aren't deep enough to beat a team like Phoenix without two of those guys. They're just not. I'm sorry. They've been playing great. I do believe that they're going to go into this one, Siakam and Van Vliet. I got a lot of faith in those two players. They're not going to play the entire game. There's also a Ayton and Chris Paul versus the Raptors in this one, and I think Ayton is going to feast on them inside. You saw what Jonas Valanciunas did. They're different players in terms of what they do on the block, but Ayton also has those capabilities. He's got a little bit – he's got that similar kind of jump shot too where he can create space over some shorter guys. I like Ayton props in this game. I don't know what is to have a double-double is. It's probably like minus 300. Like, I don't even know. What is it?
Minus 125.
Okay, well, then that's my new lock. Ayton double-double minus 125 because then I don't have to root against the Raptors.
So that's what you're going, eight and double-double?
Yeah, eight and double-double, minus 125, lock that in for me. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so that's going on the wake and rake. And to your point, the Raptors have been really good against pick-and-roll ball handlers. They've been pretty good against pick-and-roll roll men as well, but I do think they're the most susceptible team in the league or second most susceptible team in the league to offensive rebounds and second chances. They're not the greatest of teams defending like dribble handoff actions that Ayton and Paul will engage in. So yeah, there's a little bit of risk there. I do think you guys know at this point, I've been playing the, if you can get rebounding value against the Raptors, you take it lately. And DeAndre Ayton, look, he didn't have a double-double last time out, but that was also his first game back in six games. And it was a game where he didn't, you know, he played 32 minutes, but they got wiped off the floor. So I don't know that it's particularly indicative. Before he hit the inactive list, he had had double doubles in five of his last six, and only one of those was even close. Like, he was clearing it with regularity during that Suns win streak. So I think the eight and double double prop is a really good one. Ailish, do you have anything on this one? Or any of the player props stand
out
to you or anything?
Well, Blake, I told you that I thought it would be minus 300. So there you go. Like, minus 125. Yeah, you guys know that I'm pretty damn good at picking props, and at least picking the lines for props. And so I really was being a little over the top with minus 300, but I genuinely did believe that an 8 and double-double was going to be somewhere closer to like minus 250. Like, that's really the line I would have picked. Sorry. Ailish, what do you got?
No, that's okay. But like a minus 125, the implied probability there is 55%.
Yeah.
You don't think 55, like, do you think 55% of the time DeAndre Ayton would get a double-double against?
I think 85% of the time he gets a double-double against this Raptors team. So yeah.
Ailish, what about you? Are you riding any Van Vliet, Siakam, hot streak stuff here? Is there something else that stands out to you tonight?
Yeah, I'm not too hot on the Raptors-Suns game tonight. I think that I'm going to stick with hockey in terms of my wake and rake. I'm also not really sure I like any of the Leafs-Golden Knights stuff up there yet. It's been a while since they played the Golden Knights. I don't really even know how this game's going to go. I was looking at the lines. There's a couple games on tonight. But I think I'm going to go with the Nashville Predators over the Colorado Avalanche, and I'll tell you why. I usually don't bet against the Avalanche, but they are on a five-game winning streak, and they're on the back, coming off a back-to-back. It's going to be their third game in four nights, and the Nashville Predators have been well-rested. They last played on Saturday. They're on a three-game winning streak, and they're at home. So I'm feeling like if Colorado's going to lose, this is kind of the night that would happen. And then Saros in net, like, if he is playing, he's pretty undeniably one of the hottest goaltenders or one of the best goaltenders, I'd say, as of late. So I think I'm going to go plus money on the Predators money line. I looked at doing the spread, the puck line. It's minus 175. But I think I'm just going to go for the boost, the money line plus 130 Predators over Avalanche.
Yeah, I like that one. You make a good case for the Avalanche having a fallback game a little bit. you know, that one projects as like something around a 55-45, and you're getting better value than that with a 130 line.
I was going to say, I like this one as a standalone, too. Like, I think this is a good parlay piece, but if you wanted to just bet Nashville in regulation in this game, because that is one of our plays that we like to do as a show, right? That's plus 210. Like, I think that's pretty insane value when you take in all those facts. Again, it's not a comfortable feeling betting against that Colorado Avalanche
team. Especially with their offense. It's just like, I think everyone's winning player of the week every week. But they're going to cool off.
Three and four nights is a thing. Three and four nights is a real thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a something.
And there's sometimes, too, like, I'm familiar with
this. And an overtime in there against the Leafs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was gonna say I feel like I have a better handle on the actual effect of this in basketball, but like there's an emotional component to you had a very difficult comeback overtime victory against a really good opponent. So when you're talking 3 and 4, there's like a psychological maybe fatigue there as well, or hangover. I like that pick a lot, Ailish. This is not my pick, but I just want to tee up the Leafs line. So you mentioned the question that we always kick around with the Leafs is, well, there's not great value on money line a lot of times. Do you go regulation? Do you go -1.5? So when I opened the lines up this morning to get ready for this, the Leafs were actually -110. It was -110, -110 on either side. So basically even money. Anytime you can get even money with the Leafs, I think you're in pretty good shape. And this one again is like more of a 55-45 than a 50-50, assuming Jack Campbell starts. That line has since moved to -125. It looks like the Leafs are going to become a progressively higher favorite over the day. But the regulation line hasn't moved. It's still there at +145, Leafs in regulation. So if you're going the Leafs route, we're talking a 70-cent swing there to go from outright to regulation. I showed value on the -110 line. I don't know about it. Like, I think at -125 is right around where this projects as a 55-45. But 145 in regulation that's got to come down at some point, because if the main line's going from 110 to -125, that regulation line should move soon too. So I'm probably going to grab that.
You can
that.
Still get -109 at Coolbet.
Okay. Well, I will open up a different tab then. This is the issue with having a couple different books you use.
Is actually the reason why you use a couple of different books is so that you can shop lines.
Yeah.
And that if something does move this way, just like I did, I lost on my Alabama bet last night, but I got a significantly better number because I waited and shopped lines, as in I looked around a couple of different sites closer and closer to the game. And knowing what the best value was going to be is what I played. It lost, but you're still better off losing knowing that you were going to get better value than losing and only having a plus, like, 120, which is what most people got Alabama at. So I actually like the Leafs tonight. My only sort of stipulation is something that we haven't really talked about yet, which is who gets the net tonight. We've heard so many people say this is Jack's ball. Jack should get the ball. Fuda said it the other day. Sheldon Keefe has essentially said it. I don't see why the Leafs wouldn't play Jack here. The only real wild card is Arizona. The Coyotes were in a... They canceled their practice yesterday for precautionary reasons, which means that if we're reading between the lines, I haven't looked into this further, that some guys popped positive and that they had a bunch of close contacts. And what we know about Omicron is that if somebody's popping positive and there's a group, that probably means a lot of people are popping positive in the crew, okay? That's one thing that we've gotten used to. We can debate and discuss all these different things about COVID. That seems to be a lock of a lock of a lock. And if that is the case, I do wonder whether or not they're going to be able to play that game tomorrow. And if you're the Leafs, are you galaxy-braining it and saying, boy, we should play Mrazek here because we've got a week coming up where there's a lot of space between games too. I think it is next week. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm looking ahead, but I was looking at the schedule fairly recently, and the Leafs have a week coming up where they play Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you justify getting Mrazek one in there. So where do you give him his spots? Do you care about giving him his spots? All I know is Jack Campbell matters to me. He's worth value to me. I think the Leafs could still win this game with Mrazek, but I'm not betting that with the same amount of confidence until I find out he's in the net.
So, yeah, I would say, and it's actually more extreme than that, JD, because there's a game in that schedule stretch that got postponed. So they actually go Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. Or Saturday, yeah. Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday.
Yeah.
So they play five games over the course of 15 days, which not great for content, guys. Thanks. but it definitely tells you the Wednesday and Saturday games are the premium games, the premium nights for sure. So I'm with you there. My only consideration to that would be if they had operated, especially coming off of two off days, where Jack's anticipating starting this game and then having the 3 days off before St. Louis, mm-hmm. do you want to just roll with them anyway? Because I just think you, whatever your initial plan was, you stick with, because that's how Campbell uh-huh. would have been preparing, and that's how you've set up his rest here to where he plays right. only once in 6 days.
Which means yeah. he'll probably play.
Yeah, I think so.
I would say if it was my decision, I would play Jack Campbell tonight, even if you don't know that the game is canceled tomorrow, because if the game isn't canceled tomorrow, that's perfect for Mrazek, I think, against Arizona, a bit of a confidence boost. I think tonight you definitely want to come out and win, considering how you lost a little bit in dramatic fashion in the last game. He's going to want that confidence boost, that even though there's a couple days in between, that leaves a kind of a bitter taste in your mouth. If you're a goaltender, you lose, it was 4-1, they come back and you lose in overtime. I think tonight bodes well for Jack Campbell night to get in the net, regardless of tomorrow situation. And if they do play tomorrow, I like that for Mrazek. I think that could be a good matchup. He hasn't been in the net in quite a while, so why not give him Arizona, who's not the strongest?
So to just to close out the Wake and Rake, I'm gonna pivot us off here. So the Warriors Grizzlies game, super interesting tonight. There are a lot of unknowns, though. Dylan Brooks is out, Draymond Green is out, Gary Payton, Otto Porter, and Steven Adams are all questionable. So you look at a situation where the Grizzlies have won 9 in a row, and they're 8-1 against the spread in that stretch, but they're dogs at home to the Warriors by 2.5 points. So it's an interesting one there. I think that's a have to stay away until you get the injury report. Those are just too big of question marks. There's also, like, this is raises not a red flag, but a yellow flag. All the player props are up except for Clay. And the first thing I did was, especially after he took 18 field goal attempts in 20 minutes the other night, was I wanted to fire up those Clay props and see if there was something there. Those aren't up yet. So that makes me wonder if maybe there's a change in the plan coming here, or the books just want to hear confirmed that Clay is 100% playing. So I'm going to stay away from that one until we know. My pick for the Wake and Rake is going to be Oklahoma City +9.5 against the Wizards. Fly. Because it's the Wizards, man. The Wizards as double-digit favorites.
God. Yeah, so this is me. I bet the Pistons yesterday and it won, but my God, it's just the worst when you bet on horrible teams.
Yeah, I know. It sucks. But the Wizards are also bad. The Wizards have won. The Wizards are 9.5-point favorites. They have one double-digit win in their last 38 games. Yeah. Where someone gets off giving them 9.5-point favorite, the Thunder don't have anyone notable that's out. And yes, the Thunder are bad. They're also 25-14 against the spread, and have won four of their last five against the spread. It's not a good NBA night. Like, the Bulls are monster favorites. The Warriors Grizz game has too many question marks for an 8:30 a.m. slot. Suns Raptors. I don't want to bet against the Raptors on the Wake and Rake, just as a matter of, you know, vibes. OKC +9.5.
Wow. Can I just add in a little sprinkle idea? It's Chris Boucher's 29th birthday. Could be a night that he goes off. I don't know. Just a little fun tidbit for your betting information. It's a birthday boy tonight.
Yes. Unfortunately, those aren't up yet. Some of them are, but yeah, Chris Boucher doesn't have any up. So
can be fun.
Keep an eye out for those a little later, though.
I don't know how many books have Chris Boucher lines. I really don't know. But if we are also potentially factoring in a absence of Scotty Barnes, and it is his birthday, stranger things have happened. I would probably set that line on Chris Boucher at, like, over under, 6.5 points? I wouldn't hate taking the over on something like that.
Yeah,
He's
been 4.5 a lot of nights, but this recent turnaround, I'd expect it up around 6.5, maybe even 7.5 if Barnes is out. And then there would be a bit of a long shot double-double play with Boucher probably as well. So our Wake and Rake to review here, DeAndre Ayton double-double, Nashville Predators on the money line, Thunder +9.5. You put the three of those together, it's +690. Let's see if we can keep the Wake and Rake rolling here.